This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about shortages. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Right now, we're in the middle of a drug shortage that's affecting everything from ADHD medication to antibiotics and chemotherapy, and it's having a serious effect on patients. Mairead McInerney is a licensed clinical social worker. She lives near Philadelphia. In 2022, she suffered a miscarriage in the 11th week of pregnancy. She had also developed a hard bump in her right breast. At first, she thought it was related to the pregnancy. Then she had a mammogram and an ultrasound, and from there, it was a shockwave of more bad news. The lump turned out to be stage 3 triple-negative breast cancer, which is aggressive. The cancer had already moved into a lymph node. 2 weeks later, Mairead started chemo.
Here we were in the midst of grieving the loss of our child, sort of wrapping our arms around this aggressive diagnosis. They walked us through what the treatment plan was going to look like, and it's a long one, Mike, and I very visually still remember sitting there as my oncologist drew out this map, and that map to me almost looked like a marathon. I've never run a marathon, but looking at that map, I was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna take a long time.
And then more bad news. Mairead's oncologist wasn't going to be able to follow the standard protocol for her type of cancer because one of the chemotherapy drugs she needed was not available.
So what he did instead was to flip the protocol. And so it's been done before in other places. However, I was his first patient for him to do this.
It meant starting with the more heavy-duty part of treatment first.
So I dove right in. I lost my hair within 1 week, and it really knocked my blood cells down. My body was really depleted from my white blood cell count.
So you were already really weak and then having to go into round two.
Yes. Yep. So we just had to have faith that, okay, the protocol's getting flipped and we're going to do this.
Mairead was determined to fight this cancer, looking toward the light at the end of the tunnel when she would be finished with her chemo. Then she learned that there was another shortage that meant her treatment had to be changed once again.
So then to get so close to your end date and then to hear that there's now another shortage was just exhausting, Maiken. I mean, it really rocks you. Because you're thinking, A, the cancer's been out of my control, and now potentially medication is out of my control. And to see your oncology team struggle because they're the ones to have to bear these messages, but they're not in control of this either. That's heartbreaking because you know that they're also feeling helpless.
Are you concerned that the changes in your protocol that you had to make or that your doctor had to make will affect your outcomes in some way?
I know we made the best decision with the information and the resources we had at the time, but this is still a very new disease. You know, triple negative breast cancer is still very new. Mm-hmm. And so the research being done on it is still very new. And I am worried.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Mairead McInerney. She is currently going through treatment for triple negative breast cancer. For now, she's done with her chemo. Drug shortages are affecting a lot of people right now, from cancer patients like Mairead to people who are trying to fill their Adderall prescription to cope with ADHD. There are also antibiotics that are short in supply and treatments for diabetes.
Our definition of a shortage is when the hospital or the pharmacy has to change the way that they prepare or dispense a product.
That's Erin Fox. She is a clinical pharmacist.
Things like changing a patient's dose or using a different dosage form, or when a prescriber has to use an alternative, a completely different drug because the drug that they would like to use is not available. And in some cases, we do have to defer treatments or completely delay procedures.
Erin is the Associate Chief Pharmacy Officer at University of Utah Health, a big health system headquartered in Salt Lake City. She's been documenting and tracking drug shortages for over two decades, and she's seen several serious ones.
For me, it's a bit of a groundhog day. We are in a very similar place to where we were, in 2012, 2013, with a lot of oncology drug shortages at the same time. So it's frustrating to see this happen again for kind of the same reasons. But unfortunately, right now, we are at a 10-year high in the number of drugs that we're tracking.
Meaning the number of drugs where there are shortages right now. What are the causes of drug shortages? How did this happen?
That is still a bit of a mystery, honestly. With most shortages, we don't have good information usually about what is happening, what is the root cause of that shortage. Part of that is because drug companies are not required to publicly tell, their patients or their customers exactly what's going on. They're allowed to keep it as a secret.
Erin says sometimes it's staffing problems, extreme weather events that cause damage at a manufacturing plant, or quality control issues. But we don't get to find out. The whole system is very opaque. Even the people purchasing drugs for hospital systems or pharmacies don't have much information to go on. She says the worst shortages usually happen with injectable drugs that are used in hospitals and clinics like chemotherapy and generic drugs.
One of the things that's interesting about that generic drug market is the only way that those products have to compete is price. That's because, FDA rates those products as equivalent, but also the companies don't disclose additional information about, maybe they might be doing a better job at quality or redundancy. They might have backup methods to make sure that they never have a shortage. So those companies are not competing on those other factors besides price. And so, unfortunately, these companies undercut each other in price, and it's a race to the bottom.
Wow. So they might know, oh, I can get Adderall from this vendor and it costs this much, and I can get it from this other vendor and it costs that much, but they don't have any further information?
It's just price. Yeah, it's exactly like if you're shopping on Amazon, but you have no ratings, the only thing you have is price when you purchase a medicine.
Erin says the FDA does provide some information around issues affecting drug production, but it's very limited.
They will post, their warning letters. They will post inspections, and you can read those, but they're heavily redacted. And so it's impossible. So say you read a warning letter and you think, oh, I don't want to buy any drugs from that factory. Let's not have those at our clinic. Let's not have those at our hospital. It's impossible to do that because the list of products that are made at that factory is not available. It's considered to be a trade secret. And so, with that kind of blockade to transparency, we really can't make a rating system that we need. FDA has all of the information. They could make a rating system. They're actually working on one right now, but they don't intend to make those ratings public. And so...
So what's the point?
Right.
I mean, seriously, what is the point of the rating system if it's not accessible?
Yeah, it's for FDA to use internally, which is great when things are working well, but things are not working well right now.
Erin supports a new proposal from the Brookings Institution. It's a three-pronged approach to addressing and preventing drug shortages in the U.S.
We need to allow generic drug companies to compete on something more than price, such as quality. We need hospitals to be willing to pay a little bit more for that quality. And we need manufacturers to, improve their facilities and focus more on quality. Those three things, making a little bit more transparent around the quality and the competition should incentivize those manufacturers to improve quality. And then hospitals, by paying a little bit more, hospitals are already paying more for shortages right now with labor and other costs. This way, they would just pay a little bit more and actually get the drugs they need. All of those three things should work together to really help with the solution.
And is anybody tracking the direct impact of these shortages, especially with things like chemotherapy, on lives, on people's health?
Yeah, you know, we don't have necessarily a national tracking system where people can report if they are getting an alternative or were switched therapies or, you know, had to have their therapy delayed. That we know that there are published studies from past shortages showing very detrimental patient effects. You know, there was a study for cardiovascular drug, you know, a drug used in the ICUs. When norepinephrine was short, patients with sepsis who were, you know, very critically ill in ICUs had a higher mortality rate because the alternatives just were not as good as the norepinephrine. And so we know that sometimes alternatives can also have higher rates of side effects. But as a general tracking mechanism, we don't have that. Most of that just comes from independent research after the fact.
Do you feel this problem is treated with the amount of urgency it deserves? You know, it seems like it should be something where we're really clamoring for solutions because people's lives are at stake.
Right. I've considered this to be a, you know, public health crisis. That's, you know, why I've been so focused and passionate about working towards solutions for so long. I will say that the attention that these shortages are getting right now, not only from the media, but also from Congress. We've already had, you know, two hearings on drug shortages so far this year. This is the most attention this problem has ever had. And so I'm really encouraged by that. Again, it's frustrating to not see a lot of progress on this issue, but where we're at right now is the best it's been. So I'm optimistic.
That's Erin Fox. She is a clinical pharmacist and the Senior Director of Drug Information and Support Services at University of Utah Health in Salt Lake City.